This is Abroad in Education, a podcast where I unpack the international suitcase by focusing on EdPats and their experiences within education. I'm your host, Tiffany Lachelle. All around the world. So fulfilling, it's so fulfilling. Yeah, stamps on flow. Jukebox crew, full for the youth. Come on. Hey, everybody. I want to start this episode with a thank you. I hope you're well. I hope your family's well. I hope everyone around you and your world is well. Out of every podcast that you could have listened to, you're deciding to listen to mine. And I appreciate it. I really appreciate it. And I just want to start with a thank you. I still got my morning voice on, so this is a little different for me. But I woke up with you all on my mind and I decided to just, you know, record and connect with you all. So I have been in absolute reflection mode, and I'm sure you can tell, which is a good thing though. I think there's so much going around in the world, and unless we're taking time to sit down and reflect and think about what we want to manifest, gratitude, you know, I opened my eyes this morning and I was like, thank you, Lord, for waking me up to see another day. And it just feels different. It feels different to say that now. So I am in this very reflective space where I'm trying to decide or making some decisions, I'll say, about my life. You know, 2020 has been an interesting year, and I think it means more now as we get ready to end her because she has been showing out. 2020 has had so much to teach us, to show us, to undo with us. And at 34, I feel like it's a time in my lived experience when, you know, things are just completely changing. I feel like I'm finally in this space where I'm adulting. And maybe this is more like a psychological thing, but I've never considered myself an adult, or at least I've never had to feel like I was an adult, because I'll take it to, you know, college. When I left college, college was college, right? I think about even applying for your student loans. Like, I was a dependent. I had to depend on my mother, my parents. And even when I went to teach abroad, I had roommates, my second placement in Abu Dhabi. So I never felt like, oh, you know, I'm just this woman who's out in the world, you know, creating my career. It never felt that way. It felt like adult college. It felt like I had left higher education college and now I went into adult college. And then even my experience in Minnesota, it was very still transient. Like, oh, I'll be here for a couple years and then I'm going to go. Same thing now. But at this point in time, I feel like, okay, now you're adulting. People around me, I mean, who are my age and even younger, are passing away. Death has an entirely different meaning. Most recently, a young man in my hometown passed. And I mean, I barely even knew him. I know his family, of course, but I barely knew him. And it really touched me, like set me down and put me in this mode of not depression, but just like, wow, I feel this. I feel this. And even one of my best friends, she contracted COVID. And I'm like, okay, this is real. So even the feeling associated with it, it just feels completely different. I'm being touched in a way that, you know, social responsibility means something different to an adult. And I feel like other people's lives are impacted not only by me, but impacted by the way that we're choosing to do this thing called life. I don't know. And even being here, I'm in the UAE, so being able to see this from the other side, it's like, it's real, but it's also surreal. It's like, it's fake, but then it's also real. Because here, it's a very silent country. I'm still in Ras Al Khaimah. It's very silent. So many of the deaths that are happening here, you know, as the cases rise, it's one of those things where I don't know these folks. I don't know. My family's not here. You know, no one in my close world, you know, the people that I see every day, no one has died. I mean, of course, you know, there's been sickness, but no one has died. But it's like very silent. Like, you see these numbers rising, but you don't know who they are. So it's real, but then it's not. And then the social precautions is a whole different thing. So I have, in my mind, I have literally gone back to my days as a teacher in pre-K, where my mantra was, every day is a new day, and I really have to treat my life that way. I decided this past week that I was ready to transition my life to stop drinking, and I am welcoming this. And today, I believe, is like day 5 or day 6, so it's still very early. But the clarity that I have in my mind, the peace that I have in my body, is something that I miss. I completely miss it. I was just, you know, one hangover, fed up. Like, I'm so tired of wanting to do something and my body won't catch up. Or I'm so tired of, you know, having to plan my Friday so that I can have a good Saturday. But also, you know, drinking has been a coping mechanism to everything that's going on. I mean, you normalize it like, oh, it's been a long day. I'm just going to go home and have a glass of wine. And then a glass of wine turns into 5. And then it's like, okay, go to bed and get up and do it again. But that getting up to do it again is still recovering from last night. So it's like a trap. It's a trap. And I just want to try to do something different. People say insanity is when you continue to do the same thing expecting different results. Well, I'm going to do something different and expect different results. So pray for me, y'all, because, you know, at this point, it's still very new and I'm able to kind of combat, you know, the urges and the feelings. But I'm actually proud of this. I'm proud of this decision. Yeah, every day is a new day. With that being said, A Broadened Education is a bi-weekly podcast, and I know you all have noticed that a few weeks, well, let me be honest, a lot of weeks have been missing. And you know what? I have to give myself grace because I've mentioned before that, you know, this podcasting endeavor is a one-woman show. So when it comes to interviews, organizing interviews, editing, publishing, marketing, you know, all of those things, these are the things that I'm doing myself. It is time consuming. It takes time. I love it. I mean, it is definitely like teaching, you know, it's a labor of love. It's something that I'm very much connected to. I love it. But with everything that's been happening in my life, the podcast is the one thing that's been neglected. I do want to mention too, I am in this space where I do want to expand. And if you're interested in being part of podcasting, if you have a niece or a nephew or a cousin who's interested in tech and, you know, would want to give it a try at podcasting, I am very open to connecting with folks. You know, I think I'm a good role model. I think I have a lot of things to teach. So if you have anyone that you think would be a good fit to kind of come in for an internship and I could, you know, exchange for mentorship and, you know, some exchanging, everything doesn't have to be about money. Feel free to get in touch with me because that's definitely a conversation that I am excited to have, very much willing to have. So, but yeah, and it's also a good note to make for folks who are interested in podcasting in general. Podcasting takes time. I'll say it again. Podcasting takes time. Okay, one more time for the folks in the back. Podcasting takes time, especially if you care about your audience. I also want to say, and I promise you all, this is not an excuse. Ooh, excuses are tools of incompetence used to build monuments of nothingness. Look, I am not online. No, but I have a lot going on in my life. And it's not to say that you all don't either. But I actually sat and thought about this. And I realized I am not superwoman. And I'm not trying to be. So I'm in a PhD program. I'm actually in the 5th year of my PhD program. I conducted research. I have been writing articles. I am writing my findings chapters. I am soft searching for jobs. A lot of my time has been spent applying for funding, especially with fellowships and stuff. I'm working my ass off on this podcast. And I'm finally at the point where I'm on the brink. I'm on the brink of burnout. I haven't quite burned out yet, but I'm definitely on the brink. And I have to do a better job of, one, giving myself grace, and then, two, taking things off of my to-do list. I'm literally in 3 study groups, writing groups, accountability groups. And because I'm on this side of the world, connecting with people, I have my morning and my afternoon here. And then at about 5 o'clock, I'll meet with my writing group, which is their morning and my evening. So I'm basically double dipping my workday, which starts at 8 and most times doesn't end until like 11 at night. And I'm like, Tiffany, this is not sustainable. This is not okay. I need self-care. You know, this self-care is not only just giving. It's also taking time to re-energize, like finding the things that feed me, because the energy is diminishing. And I don't know, you know, if you all are feeling this way, but I'm used to just like being the Energizer bunny, going. But now I'm like, okay, I need to sit down. Okay, I need a nap. Okay, I can't do this, you know. And even when you push yourself, it's like, I can't do it. So for me, it's the podcast. I don't know what it is for you all, but whatever it is, give yourself grace. You know, you may have had a deadline and you missed it. Okay, we are not in normal times and do not treat it as such. I'm going to do better, but I'm taking the time now. So in this episode, I'm going to talk about conducting research during a pandemic from the other side of the world. And I think it's interesting to talk about it now because I'm preparing to come home, y'all. I'm coming back to the States. I have a flight scheduled for December. So it's less than a month and I'm freaking out. But I decided to use this episode to talk about this conundrum of leaving the space that I have been comfortably in and returning to a space that I'm a little nervous about. So I want to start with this fellowship, and I don't think I've actually done a good job of explaining why I'm here. A friend of mine, she got in touch, and we were having a conversation about fellowships because I think a lot of people really need more information about them. And, you know, there's a huge difference between fellowships, scholarships, grants, loans. And the reason why it's important, particularly for educators, is because most of the time when I talk to educators who have been in the profession for however many years, or they're at this space where it's like, oh, I'm tired of teaching, or they're at this space where, you know, I'm ready to do something else. There's this wall, and a lot of people don't realize how to get over the wall. So this is the like transferable skills. How do you leave the teaching profession and go into something else? And I think that's one of the bigger conversations that needs to be had as well, because I feel like there are two options. You can either go vertically in the profession where you lead the teaching, you lead the classroom and you go into, you know, an administrator position, you go into a specialist position. You know, if you want to make your way to superintendent, you're more than welcome to do that as well. Or you go horizontally where you're out of the field, out of the profession, and you're looking for another field where your skills are transferable. You know, and I hate that. I hate when people say, oh, teaching, all of the skills that you have in teaching are always transferable. Well, if somebody don't tell you where they transferred to, that's just another conversation. So many of the people like myself, my own experience, when I left the classroom, I went back to school. Because many of us do have this idea that, you know, if I can't make more in education, I need to get more education so that I can make more money, you know. And that was me as well. I'm saying that to say when people are looking into programs, higher education, one of the things that deter you at the door is the cost. Higher education is not cheap. And whether it's a master's degree or a PhD, you're looking at spending thousands of dollars. So that essentially in the next 2, or if a PhD, you know, 5-6 years, you can add another zero to your salary. And that's always the prayer, but it's not always the reality. So one of the things that I've realized about higher education are these fellowships and scholarships and grants and master's degrees. I would say it's a little different, but when you're pursuing a PhD, in my philosophy, I don't believe that anybody should pay for a PhD once you're in the door. And I'm not saying that all programs offer funding at the door, but once you're in the door, there's many different things that you can do to pay for your higher education, for your PhD. Basically, with me, my fourth year in my program, I'm going through this stage of applying for grants, for fellowships, looking for funding. And not even just funding for my tuition, but also funding, like I did end up coming to the UAE one summer to do a pilot study to see if, you know, if I was barking up the right tree with my idea for my study. So I applied for funding through this Social Science Research Council. They gave us $3,000 a piece to push our research forward, I'll say. So we had the decision, right? We could decide what we wanted to do with the money, but they basically put us in a position where here's some money, now go further your research. And what I did with the money was booked a ticket to the UAE. I came here and did my pilot study, and then, you know, I went back. They also gave us two different writers workshops where it was peer feedback and us really pushing our work forward. So the fellowship that I ended up getting here is for data collection. And my fellowship is through the Sheikh Suwad bin Sakur Al-Qassimi Foundation for Policy and Research. And it's in Ras Al Khaimah. So my fellowship provides housing. They provide my flight here and back. They provide me with a monthly stipend. And they also provide me with office space so that I could actually, you know, do the work. And I came here in September. Now, my original fellowship, I was supposed to be here from September to May. And then this thing called COVID happened around March. So all of the borders were closed. All the flights stopped. And during this time, it's crazy. It's been less than a year. During this time, the States was like, COVID, we don't know what that is. Keep the party going. And over here, we're in this go home, stay home, don't come out, you know. It's two completely different things. So I'm saying that to say I was supposed to come back to the States in May, and my fellowship was extended because basically when the borders closed, many of the folks, the other fellows that they were expecting to come couldn't. So I was able to, you know, get my part extended. So I've been here since September, over a year, and now December is coming, so I have to make my way back. I've been thinking about, and this is the thing that I just want to bring into my life in general, because if you're just working to work, I think that's why I'm close to burnout, because I don't necessarily have a goal that I'm working toward. I feel like I'm just working to work. And what I need to do is put more systems in place where I'm actually measuring my work. Like, how do you measure when you've done a good job? How do you measure success? How do you measure that what you intended to do, you actually did it? So what I did was I sat down and I wrote September 2019 to November 2020, where we are now. And I just kind of went back through like what's been happening in this time. And I'm so surprised at how much has been happening, because I am my worst critic. And it's a horrible thing to say, especially as a Black woman, because I think the world already has so many constraints on us, and then our extra added constraints makes it even worse. But I am like a perfectionist. I, you know, am my worst. You don't have to critique me, because by the time you get to your opinion, I've already beat myself up. I know where my mistakes was. I know what I could have done differently. Oh, you like that? Well, I didn't. I'm gonna do it different next time. So that's just how I am. So as I'm getting ready to go, I'm like, so what have you done, right? This is my self-conversation, my mirror talking. Like, what have you done? I want to just go through some of the things that I've done. You know, it's over a year. I keep saying, what have you done within the year? It's 2 months over a year. But I want to sit and just kind of go through some of this. So I got here September 2019. And what I forgot was when I got here, I had just passed my preliminary exam and I needed to do my oral prospectus. Because basically once you write the chapter, you have to defend it with your committee. And I forgot I hadn't done that. One of the things about the PhD program for me has been, I've been blessed. I have been able to take advantage of a lot of fellowships, grants, in-house, out-house. And it's one of those things I'm like, people are giving me money, organizations are giving me money. But when I look at like the writing and I look at the process of writing, my committee is tearing it apart. Oh, this is not good. You know, rewrite this, think about this. Like, it's just getting torn down. And I'm like, so there's, how am I getting money for a project that clearly is being torn down? And it pushed my timeline back, because when I did get the fellowship to come here, there were still a lot of things that I needed to get done before I could come. So I'm saying that once I got here, there were still things that I needed to take care of back in Minnesota. And I actually had to do my defense online here virtually when I arrived. So in September, I got here, feet on the ground running. We got to get this prospectus done. And then around November, I started with my interviews. And from my pilot study, I had already made relationships with folks, but I hadn't quite decided like who I was going to interview. And my study looks at life history. So a life history basically means that I'm doing multiple interviews with the same people. It's interesting how a lot of people haven't reflected on their stories. Like they don't even know their life story. So to sit down with someone who hasn't done that reflection, it wouldn't be a good life historian, a good candidate to study because they still have to do that work. So basically I had to, you know, get folks in line, ask them if they were interested, you know, tell them about the study. So once I did finally start interviewing in November, December, the foundation is here in Ras Al Khaimah. And many of the folks that I interviewed were in Abu Dhabi, Ras Al Khaimah, and then Dubai. So I was literally driving every weekend. And no, because it was actually during the week too. So I would leave Ras Al Khaimah, drive to Dubai, an hour and a half. Well, no, let me be honest. Dubai was not really a big thing. My life historian who was living in Dubai came later. I was driving to Abu Dhabi. 2.5 hours. So I would leave Ras Al Khaimah, drive to Abu Dhabi, 2.5 hours, stay in a hotel, you know, be there. I remember in my mind, I'm like, yep, so I'm going to do the interview and then I'm going to go to a party or I'm going to do the interview and then I'm going to go to this happy hour. I'm going to do the interview. Please, please. It does not work that way. And this is why I'm burned out because I'm steady trying to do too much. I would do the interview and these interviews, I would meet these life historians. And let me be mindful, my study is of life history. So I call my participants, I don't believe in participants because this whole study is theirs. These are their stories. So I call them life historians. So my life historians, I would meet them at their homes. I would meet them at coffee shops. One time I met Melanie. I met her at a beach and we sat and had a couple, you know, and we did our interview. It was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. It took time. It took a lot of time. It took energy. I'm staying in hotels. And I hadn't been here in a while. So I'm connecting with folks. I'm reaching out to folks. So on the road, back and forth, back and forth. And then at a certain time, my dad ended up getting a blood clot in his brain. He had a bad accident and then he had a blood clot in the brain. So he had to have surgery. You know, I'm over here panicking. Daddy, is it time for me to come home? You know, let me know. I'm in the middle of this study. But you know, when it get real, you know, I don't care about nothing. I'm coming home. Thank the Lord he got better. My great aunt, she had a stroke. And then when COVID hit, I still remember I was sick. And this is before COVID was COVID, because it was also like flu time. I got sick. And in March, I mentioned before, I spent my birthday, March 15th, in bed. I was down. And the funniest thing about that is the night before, I met this guy here, Khalif. He was working at the Waldorf Astoria. Trader Joe's does this salsa night. I love me some salsa, y'all. So it was my birthday, pre-birthday, and I'm like, okay, let's go dancing. You know, I want to go dancing for my birthday. And there was something about the weather because the UAE is very much known for being sunny every day. Like when it's cloudy, it's like, oh, this is interesting. Something's going on. It's sunny. It is beautiful. You know, it like that's the norm. But this day before my birthday, it was very cloudy and I paid attention to it because I was like, it doesn't look like rain. It's just like a whole bunch of clouds, like nasty. So we're getting ready to go to Trader Joe's and he was sneezing. He just kept sneezing. And I'm like, are you sick? Because this is when COVID, like we were talking about it, but the cases weren't there. And nobody, it wasn't like, oh, these are the symptoms. This is like literally there's this thing happening and we believe it's this. So he was sneezing and coughing and, you know, and I'm like, okay, he's fine. So we go salsa dancing. It was beautiful. My sister had bought this cake and oh, I love my sister. Goodness, I love her. Even though I'm not home, she still buys a cake because my birthday is March 15th and my niece's birthday is March 16th. So she'll buy a cake for my niece and she'll buy a cake for me. Now, she loves cake, so she benefits as well. But it was this beautiful cake with all the continents on it. And I'm in Trader Joe's and, you know, midnight hits and, you know, my sister's FaceTiming me and it's my nieces. They're in front of this beautiful cake singing happy birthday. Oh, it was so beautiful. I'm getting twisted and twirled. You know, I'm on the floor doing my salsa dancing. It's a small group of folks. So we could go over there and I'm like, it's my birthday. And they're singing me happy birthday. And you know, it come with happy birthday. So we did that too. And then the next day I wake up, it's my birthday and I cannot get out of the bed. My head is stuffy. I'm coughing. I'm sneezing. I'm in the bed like, yo, I'm not good. And at that point, because when I go to the foundation, it's very small. It's only like, you know, maybe 40 people. At that point, we were told if you do have any symptoms, don't come in. And what I'd stay home. And what I didn't realize was they were even planning, you know, lunch and this cake and all of this stuff. So when I got a call earlier in the day, like, Tiffany, are you coming? And I'm, you know, completely stuffed, completely hoarse, completely everything. Like, no, I think, you know, I might have caught it. So they ended up delivering the cake to me. They delivered the food to me. Here's some soup. Here's this. Here's that. And I was literally in the house. So yeah, that is March when I got sick, COVID hit, you know, I did all of that. And it's also the beginning of, you know, being in the bed when I'm on Bumble. That's when I met that dang romance scammer. And I have to laugh. I am laughing. I'm in a better place. But yeah, that's when I met the romance scammer. And if you haven't had a chance to go back and listen to episode 43, A Romance Scam from Abroad, you can hear all about it there. So that's when it started. March, April, May, June. And this is when the heightened COVID happened. So this is 24-hour lockdown. That's what they were doing in Dubai. You have to get online to apply for a permit to go to the grocery store, to go to the bank, to do all your essentials. Ras Al Khaimah, we were on a forced curfew. You had to be in the house by 8 o'clock. I think eventually it did go to like 11 o'clock to 6 o'clock in the morning, like 7 o'clock in the morning. Then you could come out. Everybody was working from home. It was just so much. It was so much. I was driving to Dubai to see him. He was coming to Ras Al Khaimah to see me. I'm still doing interviews, right? My interviews went from being in person to being virtual. So I had to, you know, stop driving back throughout the Emirates and I had to get on Zoom and start, you know, interviewing folks and finish all the data collection. And then by June, I started seeing this amazing therapist because I'm still like, how did you get bamboozled? Like you got a whole, you going toward a whole PhD and you got bamboozled. So this therapist has been really amazing for me, and it really is just going through the forgiveness, going through the healing, going through all of that stuff, because it's real, and it was real, and here we are. So then August, I am in this yoga retreat, new moon, new me. It's time to get up and keep moving. I'm still writing. I'm still doing online conferences. I'm applying for funding, which in September, I found out that I was selected for the Leadership Equity, Inclusion, and Diversity Fellowship. I do have to take the time and say thank you, a particular thank you to one of my amazing friends, goodness, I love her, Sara Musafer, who is one of my cohort members in my PhD program, but then also a really amazing friend. I really do need to take time to give her accolades and tell her thank you because she's the one who informed me about the fellowship. And I'm telling you, if you don't have friends like her, you're not living life right. What we did was when she told me about the fellowship, we decided, both of us applied, and we decided that we were going to give each other feedback on our applications. So we're writing the applications together. One, accountability. We're writing the application. And then two, peer reviewing. So then she's reviewing mine, I'm reviewing hers. And what Sara does, she just has this embodiment of spirituality, I'll say. So if you're just like writing bland, you're not really talking, like you talking, but you ain't talking, like she's gonna call you out. Like Tiffany, okay, so where are you in this? Like this is your CV, where are you? So the way that she pulled out many of those, yes, and this is valuable and what you're doing is valuable. My whole proposal was based on me talking about my podcast and how I believe storytelling is this way of decolonizing the imagination. Like bell hooks says, we're going to decolonize imaginations by, and in my mind, I'm like, I'm doing it by this podcast, handing the mic to folks like, here you go, tell your story. So I did get selected for that fellowship, and it's a big one. It's the biggest one that I got. It's $33,000. They pay for your tuition. They pay for health benefits. And then around that same time, I discovered that I have two cysts, one on each ovary, and it really tore me down. And this is another time where I'm like, oh, it's a good thing I got that therapist, because I do question, right? And I think it's human nature. I question if I'm living life right. Many of my good friends are in the stage in their life where they are married, kids, buying homes. We all don't have, well, I guess one of my friends got her career down pat, but we all still working on the career thing. But I was in this questioning stage, like, is it too late? You know, you've dedicated all of this time to education. You've dedicated all this time to traveling the world. Here you are at 34 and your body is showing out. Like, where are we? So I've come to terms with allowing God to continue to guide my life. Whatever is meant to happen will. Like I said, every day is a new day. Here we are. And then, of course, I casted my vote from abroad. I helped bring in Biden. Hey. And then I've also started this new endeavor. I call it Tuesdays with Grandpa. And every Tuesday I say more Tuesdays than not, I am sitting down with my grandpa and he is unpacking his life. I'll actually be sharing a lot more information about that soon. So, and now that December is coming, I'm getting ready to go home. So measuring, right? If I look at all of that and really think about success, measuring success from September 2019 to December 2020, I think I'm good. I think I'm good. I've had a lot of life. I've had a lot of success in my academic space. At this point, I need to finish up my two chapters, my findings chapters, which is going to be amazing. It's already amazing. I'm already writing. And then I'm going to finish up this program. In May, I will be Dr. Smith. So once I come home, I have 5 months to get some stuff together. And then that's it. I'm good. So measuring my timeline that I've been here, I'm very satisfied, you all. I'm surprised that I'm still moving forward, because so many people would have crumbled up, you know, in the fetal position and went home, tail tucked between their legs. And there is a sense of resilience, flexibility, adaptability that you have to have being abroad. And thank the Lord, I've been in this for a while, so I'm moving forward. So I want to take some time to think about, like, what does it mean to come home? And that's where I'm a little stuck. And I just want to grapple out loud about it, because there's a couple different things. One, of course, is COVID. So here in Ras Al Khaimah, let me not speak for the UAE, because it's different in every emirate. So what's happening in Abu Dhabi is completely different from what's happening in Dubai, is completely different from what's happening in Ras Al Khaimah and the other four emirates. Here, typically, a typical day to go to the grocery store would be me, you know, getting myself together here, putting my mask on, driving to the store. Now, I'm at the store. You have to put gloves on, which are provided, just the plastic, you know, kitchen gloves. There's a man there wiping down the carts, hot water or some kind of chemical wiping down. They also have those machines, which I never walked through them. Yeah, I'm going to be honest. But they have those little mist machines that smell like bleach and water. So you can walk through those. You know, you get your temperature taken and you go in and you shop. You know, you keep your mask on. All of the dividing, like the plastic dividers, have been put in front of all the cashiers. And then you go home. If you're going to a restaurant, it's a little different. You go to the restaurant. Some restaurants will require that you sign your name to even be there. But you get your temperature taken, you know, you wear your mask to get in. But then once you're in, yeah, the mask does come off, especially because you're eating. But there are numbers, you know, as far as how many people can sit at a table, which most likely is either four or five. They don't let you mix tables. You know, you still have to be socially distanced. And sometimes they'll say, oh, you know, are you all in the same family? But most times it's not a big deal. You know, you have your capacity at how many folks can sit at a table. It's different. It's different because just, what, a couple weekends ago, it was karaoke night. And even to do the karaoke, nobody could come inside of the square. So you had to be up there singing, you know, folks are outside, you're in this little corner, but it was fun. So I'm saying that here in RAC, there are social precautions. There is no, how do you say it, resisting. There is no, you know, rebuttaling. It is, this is a social precaution and you do it. And if you don't, you will be fined. I don't know if folks are getting jailed, but, you know, it's not a choice. You don't have a choice. And at this point, I think the beautiful thing about it is it's normal. It's normal. Like, I don't question wearing my mask. If I go outside and I don't have my mask, I'm like, oh, shoot, I'm tripping. Where's my mask? So I'm thinking about the stories that I've heard about what's going on in the States. And it really does make me nervous about, you know, people not wearing masks and, you know, what's happening in the stores. And when I come home, I'm actually going to be staying with my grandmother. So my grandmother, she's older. So I have to be mindful about, you know, the people that I'm even around, the type of lifestyle that I can have. I imagine I can't just be out, you know, kicking it with everybody and then go home to grandma. So I have to even be mindful about what I can do. I'm also thinking about, and I guess this is where my mindset has been shifted, because some people believe that, you know, once you catch COVID, you're dying. And there are many cases where folks have caught it and then they're fine. So I need to get it in my mind that you can catch it and be fine. It's a shift that I have to make in my mind. So that's one thing, COVID. I do worry about it, especially being in a place where I feel like it's very safe and then going to a place where I feel like it's mediocre. I don't even want to say mediocre safe, just mediocre, like folks out here doing what they want to do. But I have kept up with the news and I know some things are being called to happen. Another thing that I am nervous about, and I don't know, maybe this is something for folks who are in higher ed, but it's something about coming to the finish line that is, I don't know, it's like a phobia. Like, when I finish, then what? Like, what am I going to do? And to put this into perspective, I have 5 months, and this is my own timeline. I'm giving myself 5 months. Of course, I can extend it. And I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking about, what job do I want? You know, where do I want to be? Do I want to stay in the States? Do I want to come abroad? You know, if I want to come abroad, what country do I want to go to? If I stay in the States, what state do I want to be in? I was thinking the other day, I'm like, wow, I've only lived in Illinois and Minnesota. Those are the only states I've lived in. And of course, I've traveled to other states, but I've never lived in other states. And then even abroad, I've lived in Morocco. I've lived in the UAE. I do worry if I've worn out my welcome in the UAE. And if it is the case, like if I don't get a job here, I don't know. Like, I haven't envisioned myself living somewhere else abroad. I do believe, and of course, there's so many options right now. You know, people are digital nomads and, you know, they're offering services virtually, which is perfect for this time now. I imagine that I could spin the globe and put my finger down and go, but I'm also 34. So I'm at this place where I want roots. I want roots, y'all. I want to buy a house. I want a husband. I want kids. I want to feel like I am rooted somewhere. The suitcase living was amazing in my 20s. You know, look, I'm trying to date myself. I'm about to say early 30s. I'm still in my early 30s. But it was amazing. The suitcase living was amazing. 2 years here, 2 years here, 2 years here, traveling the world, you know, not needing, this is my apartment for now, and then I'll go, no. So I need to, one, envision the life that I want to have. Two, start doing things to manifest it. And three, receive it. I have not imagined going home. And even, I'm from Alton, Illinois. So even going back to Alton, I'm thinking, wow, it's been years since you've actually lived home. In 2015, when I left Abu Dhabi to come back to the States, I stayed home at the most 2 months, because I was all over. It was like a trip. I'm traveling here, going here. So I stayed there for maybe 2 months max. And then I ended up moving to Minnesota. So when I think about this, I have not lived at home since like 2010. And 5 months is a long time. And I just imagine, I don't know if I can imagine myself like living in Alton. Alton is a small town. It's not a city, right? The nearest city is St. Louis. And of course, there's suburbs like Edwardsville, which I could easily be fine in. There's many affluent, fine suburbs around as well. And I'm like, do I even want to be a suburb mom, wife? I don't know. So this is part of the, well, you know, once you finish a PhD, you got to make some life choices. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready to make these life choices. So I really need to pray about it because it can be stressful. And this finish phobia, like don't finish too soon because then you know you got to grow up for real. I have to figure out what I'm doing with that. And then I guess the question too is, do I want to go back into K-12? Do I want to go into higher education? Do I want to go into, you know, these international development organizations like, you know, USAID, UNESCO, World Bank, foundations in different countries? Like, what do I want to do? And this is the fun part, but then the scary part as well. Yeah, here we are. So I know I have been going all over my fellowship, talking about some of the things that I'm worried about with going home, talking about COVID, just like this is my grapple session. Good morning. I'm almost done with my cup of coffee too. But to close it up, I do want to mention season 3 is coming close to an end. There's a couple of more episodes before I wrap the season up. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for staying strong, staying committed. Thank you for continuing to listen to the podcast. I have already started connecting with people for season 4. And for season 4, I want to focus on relationships abroad because we don't have enough conversations about what happens, you know, in the intimate part. I think so many people are caught up with lifestyle, they're caught up with how-tos, but we don't talk enough about what is it like being in relationships and intimate or platonic or, you know, whatever it is with relationships. So I'm super excited. I actually did the first interview yesterday, you all, and it was beautiful. I can't wait to share it with y'all. Oh, it was so beautiful. If you are someone, one, and if you know someone, two, who has an interesting story about relationships abroad, I would love to hear from you. I would love to hear from them. It does not have to be about marriage. It doesn't have to be about, you know, raising kids. It doesn't have to be about, when you think about relationship, it doesn't even have to be about dating, honestly. A relationship could be you traveling the world and finding out and building the relationship that you have with yourself. Relationship could be about dating apps, you know, where you're traveling and meeting folks and then, you know, something beautiful happened from this one experience. And I would love to hear something that is provocative in a way like, ooh, I didn't think about that. So yes, if you would love to share your relationship abroad story with Abroad in Education, I would love to hear from you. I would love to hear from you. I'm so excited about this season and I cannot wait to share it with you all. I'm going to close up with that. Thank you so much. Thank you, you all. I really appreciate it. Just the fact that, you know, you're choosing to listen to Abroad in Education, that you're hanging in with me. I have a couple of things that are happening behind the scenes and I look forward to moving forward. Okay. Stay safe. Keep going.
Abroad in Education is created by Tiffany Lachelle Smith. Lady Justice, the song that you're listening to, was written and produced by Rillionaire Dreams. You can get his Postcards album on SoundCloud. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you download your favorite podcast. Let's keep the conversation going and follow me on Instagram at abroad_in_ed. And you can also access the website at abroadineducation.com.